It is rare that we play as much of that tune as we do. Artie Shaw, Begin the Beguine. Good evening and welcome on this Wednesday evening. Jeffrey Bennett here with another installment of To Health With You. Yeah. I know the name of the program is Perspectives on America, but today we talk about perspectives on our health. This is going to be a very unusual program for reasons we'll share with you a little bit later. Some of the things we've published lately on the Dr. Kelly website, one of them really kind of ticked me off, but it was not a surprise. I spoke about this last week, I think. YouTube is banning videos that discuss the benefits of alternative health issues. Now, it's not to say that some of them aren't wackos, but there's a lot of decent stuff out there. There's a website called Natural News, and he's now expanded into many, many other names, dealing with cancer and other health-related issues. Mike Evans is the guy's name. And Mike set up his own YouTube type of situation, I think it's called BitChute, to ensure that this kind of information could continue to come before the public. Now, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or CDC, has routinely labeled accurate news articles as misinformation, because they went against the government's pro-vaccine narrative. Review of internal messages that were circulated widely within the CDC shows all of this. Now, one of them referred to a peer-reviewed study that concluded that myocarditis, a type of heart inflammation, was more common among patients following COVID-19 vaccination than an infection with the virus itself. In the study, Nordic researchers assessed electronic health records and found 530 cases of myocarditis following the vaccine versus just 109 after the infection. And all of this was printed by the highly respected British Medical Journal. And yet the CDC noted in an internal email that had been picked up by anti-vax proponents as evidence that vax was more likely to cause myocarditis than COVID-19 infection. And that email, which was dated 1 year ago today, was dated February the 7th, 2023, listed an article from the Epoch Times about the peer-reviewed study in a list of points of confusion / potential rumors / misinformation without providing any additional information to support that classification. Now, a physician and scientist for the University of California, San Francisco, Dr. Tracy Hoog, told the Epoch Times that its article on the study should not be labeled as misinformation, adding that the study's findings aligned with those of previous research, such as paper printed in the journal JAMA Cardiology, which at that time concluded that some populations had higher rates of myocarditis after receiving the vaccines than they did after being infected with the virus. Now, there was numerous other instances of similar studies being falsely labeled as misinformation by the CDC. For example, their emails show that a video in which a doctor explained data showing the COVID-19 vaccines had an adverse effect on gut health and was labeled misinformation by the agency despite being based on published research. In another case, the CDC labeled a story about the government being paid royalties from Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine as being misleading or inaccurate, despite officials from the company disclosing in an earnings call that they had formed a patent agreement with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases and had in fact spent sent a $400 million payment, which would be followed by further royalties in the future. Well, then a CDC email was dated March of 2023 claimed that anti-vax proponents questioned Moderna's new patent agreement with NIAID, citing catch-up payments and royalties as a conflict of interest. Well, yeah, that's exactly what it was. And the director of the NIAID's parent agency, Dr. Lawrence Tabak, conceded that royalty payments present, quote, an appearance of a conflict of interest, end quote. Well, the Epoch Times pointed out that the CDC itself defines employees participating in matters that they have a financial interest in as a conflict of interest. The CDC's parent agency, the Department of Health and Human Services, notes that a financial conflict of interest could jeopardize honesty, particularly when the financial interests in question are significant. And $400 million feels pretty significant. Well, then Michael Chamberlain, the director of a group called Protect the Public's Trust, a nonprofit that aims to inform the public about conflicts of interest among government officials, told the Epoch Times that the agency is quick to slap a derogatory label on any statements that don't fit its preferred narrative, and just as quick to impugn the motives of anyone who dares make those statements. This is not government working for the people. It is government as adversary to the people, he said. And so the CDC labeled vaccine criticism misinformation just so they could censor it. Yeah. Last fall, a U.S. appeals court ruled that the CDC, along with other governmental entities such as the Surgeon General, the FBI, and the White House, likely violated the First Amendment by coercing social media platforms to moderate content about vaccines that they claimed was misinformation. Well, much of the pressure referred to in the decision took place in 2021 as the government tried to push people to get the COVID-19 jabs. The decision noted that the pressure had the intended result of suppressing millions of protected free speech posting by American citizens. It goes on and on, doesn't it? I published that article a day or so ago. Now, there's a reason I share this with you, so just bear with me. Because I closed that thing, which I should not have done. Because I just have to share one more thing about it. Let's take a look and see. All right. I published that article yesterday, February the 6th, in our category, A Shot in the Dark. Having done that, some weeks ago, I'd come across an article that I had published in May of 2002, that's a long damn time ago, baby. I mean, that's 22 years ago. Written by a marvelous writer, woman who's no longer with us. And it was entitled The People Versus Vaccines. Now, keep in mind, this is 22 years ago this was written. I had originally published it on the original Dr. Kelly website and probably on Federal Observer as well. Dorothy begins by saying government-mandated vaccinations are coming front and center again as parents around the nation notice that after supposed immunization, their kids develop other illnesses, if not the very ones they were vaccinated to prevent. At this point, Dorothy Ann says that I owe a big thank you, Granny, to my grandmother, my mom's mother, for her orders to my mom never to have me vaccinated as a child. What Granny knew in the early 1940s, a few honest medical doctors are speaking out about now, May of 2002. The dangers of vaccination and worse, their effectiveness in so many cases. Now, at the time that Dorothy Ann wrote this piece, and she lived here in Phoenix, Sun City, actually, she had tuned in to KFYI radio in Phoenix and heard Dr. Lorraine Day speaking about some of the horrors of vaccination and many of the after effects. Now, Dr. Day had not been the first speaker that Dorothy Ann had ever heard on this subject, but it was time to remind the people outside of a listening area that a well-credentialed medical doctor has come forward to make her views and knowledge about vaccinations available to the public, which most doctors will not do. Dorothy Ann talks about the Salk polio vaccine coming out after she graduated from high school. She never took it. And yet, in order to enter UCLA, she was required to be vaccinated for smallpox. And the unpleasant reaction from that single vaccination alone was enough to convince Granny that her granny had been right. It had also convinced her that vaccinations were more hazardous than people are told by their physicians, and that also is now coming to light. More and more parents are wishing up to the fact that their kids are not only susceptible to other ailments after vaccination, but that all too often they come down with a disease against which they were supposedly immunized. The doctor always blames another strain of the virus or bacillus. Or is it bacillus? But since most of us aren't microbiologists or medical people, she continues, who can prove what? Now, both of Dorothy Ann's parents survived the 1919-1920 Spanish flu epidemic as youths, or she would not have been around in 2002 to write this column. There was no vaccine then. Neither of her parents contracted Spanish flu, but until her mom had to go to a nursing home, now euphemistically referred to as a care center, she never had a flu shot. Dorothy Ann Cease had never taken a flu shot and did not intend to as long as she was a free American citizen. As a child, she was never vaccinated for anything. The only diagnosed disease she contracted was red measles. And at age 31, she contracted German measles from one of the people in her department whose child had it, gave it to her mother, who subsequently passed it on to Dorothy Ann, and then she gave it to her mother. And yet everyone survived quite nicely with no permanent damage. And yet permanent damage has been and is being reported as a result of vaccinations, notably at the time of her writing, the anthrax vaccine. But in spite of the growing evidence of the harmful side effects and ineffectiveness of some vaccines, there are states where vaccination is mandatory. Parents are subject to fines, or worse, if they refuse to have their children vaccinated. And so the question begins, what are we doing to our people? And why? In her interview on KFYI that day, Dr. Day had stated that 6 out of every 10 doctors in the United States has some financial interest in pharmaceuticals, directly or otherwise, which looks very much like the same old story. Follow the money trail. A side note, Lorraine Jeanette Day was an American author, orthopedic trauma surgeon, chief of orthopedic surgery at San Francisco General Hospital, and a promoter of alternative cancer treatments. She first became controversial when she began advocating that patients be tested for AIDS prior to surgery. We lost Lorraine Day just 3 months ago. She passed away November 10th of 2023. Let's continue with Dorothy Ann's commentary. Dorothy Ann says parents who were concerned about being forced to have their kids injected with stuff that can have dire after effects should make a point to learn the truth about what's in vaccines, how they're made, what poisons are in the serums, and case studies of after effects. Of course, our government doesn't want you to know about this stuff, but with Uncle Sam's needle in hand, mandatory vax laws about to be shoved into up our systems, it's time we realize we have a very personal stake in the laws that our Congress passes. It could well be a matter of life or death. I, for one, Dorothy Ann continues, after having had to suffer through 2 smallpox vaccinations in my lifetime, don't intend to take another vaccination for anything. What I endured in my late teens and again in my early 30s, she said, might well be fatal this time. There are better ways to die. But you see, the idea that government can control our lifestyle right down to forcing us under the injection needle is a total abridgment of our constitutional freedoms. They don't care, so we have to be concerned. And we have to act. Now, she talked about this at the time, being a number of websites on the effect of vaccinations that could be assessed via the internet, as she would continue to challenge her readers. Ladies and gentlemen, start your search engines. I often wonder, she continues, when are the citizens going to wake up and smell the poison? It's time to tell our government we just don't want any more of their nonsense. You know that word nonsense. There's another word for it. Bull. Yeah, well, you get it. But now is the time to do it before the next bioterrorism attack, because that's most likely what it'll be, since we had the anthrax test run in October of '01. Oh, yeah, sure, there could be some nukes around, but it would seem that once a bioterrorism experiment has been weighed, that bio would be the attack of choice. Nukes can get out of hand, but then so can epidemics. Seems that the Sustainable Earth program is being put into effect quietly, like most programs against which citizens would rebel if the truth were known, which I find interesting. Like most programs against which citizens would rebel if the truth were known. There's a problem with that sentence today. The truth is known, and most citizens don't have the guts to rebel. Look, it's simple. If Dorothy Ann concludes that if you are a firm believer in vaccinations, find out what you believe in so you can weigh your opinions and beliefs. Find out the other side of the story. It's available. And you will at least have seen both sides of the issue. Your decision will be an informed choice, not a matter of sheeple compliance. Those who still want vaccinations should be able to obtain them. Those who do not should not be forced to have the injections. As Dorothy N. completed this column, she made a very simple statement. Lethal injections are for criminals. We need to keep it that way. May 5th, 2002, Dorothy N. Cease. Dorothy N., an interesting history. She was a child actress in Hollywood, most well known for her role as Phronsie Pepper in the Five Little Peppers series of films. Later in life, she became a freelance political writer for Patchwork Papers and a regular contributor for the First Generation Federal Observer. At the time of that post we've just shared with you, she'd been retired after 25 years as a legal secretary assistant, and prior to that, over 15 years as a business systems and procedures analyst. Her hobby? Freelance writing. She was a native of Southern California. Dorothy Ann Cease resided in Sun City, Arizona until her death in December of 2015 of cancer. I am just so proud and so ecstatic to be able to have Dorothy Ann Cease's writings. We have some of them published at Federal Observer. All you got to do is go to Federal Observer, and under the search bar at the right-hand side, you can type in the name Cease, S-E-E-S-E. I may have more on drkelly.net. I don't know. I guess I could take a fast look. See what pops up here. Apparently so. Only one other one. Looks like. Let me see what happens. Nope. Yep, it was. It was written by Dorothy Ann Cease, another piece we have published on, originally published in June of 2003 on drkelly.net. Now it was drkelly.info. I guess I got some work I got to do on the thing. A few little oddball things I got to do. She talked about fibromyalgia in depth. Yeah. Well worth spending our time with. Now, last week, we shared a piece with you about hypothyroidism called Do You Have Hypothyroidism? Look at your hands. Now, if you don't remember, hypothyroidism is the medical term for an underactive thyroid gland, which happens when our thyroid does not produce enough hormones to meet our body's needs. This is the foreword that I provided for that article. As I stated, that the following is more interesting to me, as I was diagnosed with hypothyroidism some 22 years ago. And yet, no doctor had ever bothered to share anything that's embedded in that article with me. Nor did either of them describe exactly what I had, nor how it would affect me. Now, no, I'm not going to share the story about hypothyroidism all over again, but I'm using that as a lead for the next couple of intense presentations we're going to do on this program tonight. Because I begin to find that I'm having some other issues. And they have been growing. Not physically, to the best of my knowledge. And so sharing that paragraph about peace being more interesting, because no doctor had ever bothered to share any of the following with me, that particular piece is going to follow suit with the next two stories and commentaries that we're going to share. However, my voice must go have a dance with Kim. So I'm going to let Michael come on, set us up with a little dance with Kim. And I'll be back in a few minutes for part one of our continuing horror story about the medical community. Stay with us. Smell some funky little things going on? Let me share this story with you. It's not so much a story, it's something I wrote years ago. Read your history, people. Stock markets collapse on Friday. Bank seizures, closures, holidays take place after business hours on Friday. Do currencies or governments also collapse on Friday? Tomorrow's Friday. Will the end come on this Friday, or will the inevitable collapse hold off for a while? The next round of the worst financial crisis in 100 years is coming, people, and the government is out to make you and I pay for it. And will your savings survive a global banking wipeout? What happens when the U.S. sees hyperinflation? What if taxes soar not only for the rich? Can you survive if the stock market tanks? Look, between a stock market wipeout, waves of bank failures, soaring government spending that will lead to hyperinflation, and the destruction of the dollar's value, isn't it time that you prepare for the uncertainty which lies ahead? Protect your money now or forever kiss it goodbye. My friends, I offer you over 6 decades' experience of hard asset ownership and knowledge. And I'm prepared to handle the smallest detail in the balanced protection of your portfolio. For as the future of uncertainty continues to blanket this nation of ours, I believe that I can offer you the privacy, safety, security, and possibly some profitability which you deserve. And so I invite you to visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com for further information regarding protecting your wealth. Or call me, Jeffrey Bennett, at 602-799-8214. Or by email at KettleMoraineLTD@Cox.net for private consultation. Once again, our phone number, 602-799-8214. It's almost Friday. Oh, my goodness. There's times I need to take a break. I got off the air last night. I have to tell you, I almost don't even remember being on the air last night, but I know I was here. And I don't know what I did afterwards. I guess I got something to eat. I maybe watched TV for a while, but I was working on some paperwork for auto insurance, which is due for renewal tomorrow night, but I'm not renewing with that company. And they don't really seem to have people you can talk with. Everything is done online. And I don't like that. I guess I'm getting too old for this. Everything you do anymore is online. And then you got to have a password for this and a password for that. And oh, hey, please give it up. Anyway, I don't remember what I did. I think I finally decided to just go to bed. I wasn't feeling good. I had gone into my heart doctor's office yesterday for, I may be mispronouncing the word, an endocrine test. You lay on your side and they run a bunch of tests to see how your heart's doing. It's doing great. But something about that visit wasn't right. And I had to lay on my side, and maybe it's the way I adjusted my shoulder. And I was in such horrific pain all night last night. I'm still in pain with it. It's getting a little better, but awful. And I don't remember if I slept, didn't sleep. Maybe I did for a while. I got up. I worked on a very involved piece that I wanted to publish. We're going to talk about it a little bit later. And I think around 3 o'clock or so, I finally gave up and went to sleep with a heating pad on my shoulder, trying to get this thing to soften the blow, so to speak, the god-awful pain. It was just horrendous. I woke up at 7 this morning. Wife was already gone to work, which I mentioned, hallelujah. And I took my morning meds. I went back to sleep. Didn't wake up till almost 10:30 this morning. I've had a busy day. I've had to work on insurance paperwork. This unbelievably intense article that I came across several weeks ago that opened my eyes to things like I've never seen before. Now, I shared with you just a few minutes ago, before the break, my commentary about my hypothyroidism and how doctors had really never bothered to share much of what we had broadcast last week in my 22 years, never shared any of it with me, never described exactly what I had nor how it would all affect me. And then I come across this other article some weeks ago, which I chose to publish, I don't know when. Last week, February the 4th, 5, 6, 7. I guess it was this week. It's entitled Scalp Folliculitis, Treatment for Inflamed Bumps. Now, that's interesting. Sometime last year, I was diagnosed with a moderate term of is it called Skittles? Or do I just keep naming it that because of my warped mindset? Shingles. I was diagnosed with shingles. Doctor said, no, you don't need a vaccination. Here's the pills. You take one a day or two a day for the next week, and that'll be it. Well, the problem is some of the problems have not gone away. The shingles isn't there, but it's caused something else now, occasionally. But the one that bothers me is what I'm getting in my scalp occasionally, although it has calmed down a bit. But I get bumps. Scalp folliculitis is a skin condition that affects the hair follicles on the scalp. Causes inflammation within the follicle, creating a bump. It can be found anywhere on the scalp or the hairline. Treatment might vary based upon the underlying cause. And what we're going to share with you today, we'll discuss the causes and the symptoms of scalp folliculitis. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the treatments that each specific cause might require. Don't misunderstand. I'm not coming on the air sharing this story with you to whine about some of the issues I'm going through. But I also suspect that some of these very issues that I'm going to talk about, there's enough of you out there that may be sharing similar situations. A healthcare provider should examine any form of scalp folliculitis to determine the underlying cause. Now, that's interesting. Treatments are based on the underlying cause. Getting the correct diagnosis is imperative to proper treatment. But let's talk a little bit about some of the causes, some of the treatments. But this is oh so interesting, because I've continued to talk to my doctor about these issues. The same doctor that has been counseling me on my hypothyroidism for 20-odd years. I happen to like the guy. We get along. We have side conversations. And by the way, I shared this article with him. And next time I see him, I expect to have a discussion with him about it, because it's the same old story. The doctors seem to want to tell you only what they feel they need to tell you, because, you know, they don't want to go over the top of your heads and share things with you that you might not understand. I understand that I get bumps. And I also get, not bruises, but I get some discomfort, like on the side of my head, where there's hair, that can be very discomforting. Well, let's talk about bacteria. When scalp folliculitis is caused by a staph or another type of bacteria, it might resolve without treatment. And yet some people may need antibiotic treatment to resolve the symptoms. Be a topical antibiotic applied to the affected area or an oral antibiotic. Then there's also the fungal issue. If the underlying cause of scalp folliculitis is Pityrosporum, then an oral antifungal is the best treatment. And occasionally a topical antifungal can be used, but the topical cream does not penetrate deep into the hair follicles and may not completely clear the infection. Now, they recommend the potential of using a dandruff shampoo that has an antifungal-like ketoconazole or ciclopyrax, which can help manage systems. Now, it's interesting. And I, Michael, are you close by? Okay, stick the music on. I've got to grab something out of the bathroom that I've got to share. Just stick the dance music on. I'll be right back. Let me tell the audience. I'm going to run down to my restroom for just a minute. I, having shared this fungal story with you, I've got to grab something out of my bathroom that I must share with you folks. We're going to dance with Kim for 30 seconds. I'll be right back. You wouldn't be long. You know, it's interesting. I don't do a pre-research reading of everything I'm going to share with you. If I had, I would have instantly thought about bringing this into my office tonight. It's talking about using dandruff shampoos for fungal issues and pittosporum and stuff like that. Let me tell you, sometimes a pharmacist can be a far greater help than your own physician. Okay, now remember, Kelly used these words one time. Let us not be hypocrites. It is so easy to condemn our medical profession, and rightly so. Of all the people in the world who should understand physiology and ecology, they should, but they do not. And so, having just shared this piece about the bacteria and the fungal, and there's more, when all of these issues were taking place with me and the soreness and the pills he gave me did not do a damn thing, I decided to go talk to my pharmacist. And he recommended something that is doctor recommended. Well, my doctor damn sure didn't recommend it. It's a product called MG, like Mother of God, 217. I'm going to read you the front label. Psoriasis. It is a therapeutic shampoo and conditioner. It softens, lifts, and removes scaling and buildup. 3% sal hyphen acid. It soothes and conditions, repairs and protects and moisturizes. I've got a couple bottles of this stuff. Now, I don't know what you've got pharmacy-wise in your community. I happen to buy this at Walgreens, which is where I get my drugs, my meds. Maybe they're drugs. You get my warped sense of humor. MG217. Apparently there's different variations of it, but I acquired the psoriasis. P-S-O-R-I-A-S-I-S. See if you can find it if you are having any of these issues. It is manufactured by Lake Consumer Products out of Jackson, Wisconsin. And by the way, it is made in this country. Okay? This ain't no chinky-dink product. Keep that in mind. I may take a picture of this and add it to the article later. I'm not getting any money for doing it. I put this information out there to help. I'm not the only one out there that's got these issues. Now, what happens when we deal with viral situations? Treatment for viral causes of folliculitis will vary based upon the virus type. People with a herpes infection will be treated with a dacyclovir, like A-C-Y-C-L-O-V-I-R, or a valacyclovir, or a famiclovir. Those with molluscum infections can be treated with cryotherapy. And we deal with mites. Yeah, kind of sounds unpleasant, doesn't it? 80 to 90% of the people have mites on their skin. And when mites cause folliculitis, for the first treatment is typically a tropical permethrin cream. Other treatments include oral ivermectin. Oh, don't bring up ivermectin. That's according to, you know, YouTube and these other antis. That's a bad drug. Yeah, well, guess what? It's not. What about oral metronidazole? You can use or alone or together. How do we manage recurring scalp folliculitis after remission? Well, personally, this is the only shampoo I use. Recurring scalp folliculitis will need to be treated by a healthcare provider. Well, mine ain't providing. I'm doing it myself now. So many different causes and variations of scalp folliculitis. Managing the condition at home without professional help can lead to further problems. Yeah, well, guess what? Mine seem to be clearing up. Contact a dermatologist, a type of healthcare provider who specializes in skin conditions. My doctor referred me to a dermatologist, and when I met with him last week for other issues, I informed him that it would be advised for him to never refer another patient to that dermatologist again, and I explained to him exactly what I'd gone through when I saw her the month before. A totally worthless piece of human caca. But the article tells us that dermatologists will be best prepared to develop a treatment plan suited for someone with recurrent scalp folliculitis. But what about treatment and other options for permanent scalp changes? If you've got severe scalp folliculitis that's resistant to treatment, you may experience hair loss to scalp changes. Treatment for severe folliculitis can include oral isotretinoin, antibiotics, or steroids. It's normal for someone to be concerned about their appearance if there's changes to the skin on the scalp or if there's hair loss. A head cover like a hat or a scarf or a wig can cover the scalp while the hair grows back. But the question that I begin to ask is what are the causes? Why does scalp folliculitis break out? It's caused by inflammation within the hair follicle. What causes the inflammation is not always known, but the most common cause is a bacterial infection of Staphylococcus aureus. Other causes of scalp folliculitis include, and you know I have difficulty with these marvelous medical words sometimes, Pityriasporum folliculitis, a fungal infection caused by Malassezia fungi. Gram-negative bacterial folliculitis, also known as the hot tub folliculitis, caused by gram-negative bacteria like Pseudomonas aeruginosa. And viral folliculitis, typically caused by the herpes virus, but can also be caused by molluscum contagiosum. Demodex folliculitis, caused by a mite commonly found on the skin. And eosinophilic folliculitis, a rare form of folliculitis caused by inflammation or an underlying infection in those with a weakened immune system. Scalp folliculitis can also be caused by inflammation due to ingrown hairs or certain medications. Well, maybe some of those medications I'm taking are causing it. Several conditions cause symptoms similar to scalp folliculitis. Other conditions that may be confused for scalp folliculitis include acne, rosacea, keratitis pilaris, Let's talk a little bit about how to tell if you've got scalp folliculitis symptoms. Might appear as small red bumps along the hairline around the scalp. Those bumps can be papules, inflamed bump that does not appear to be filled with pus, or a pustule, which is an inflamed bump that does not or does appear to be filled with pus. And the affected area may be itchy, might be painful, leading to scratching and soreness. Other symptoms that can indicate someone has got scalp folliculitis include scalp sores, bumps that drain pus, yellow-brown scabs, and fever. And I ain't talking about a song by Peggy Lee. Scalp symptoms not getting better? They can usually be treated at home. But if symptoms are not getting better or worsening, then it is time to contact the healthcare provider, maybe. And they might be able to definitively diagnose the folliculitis cause and determine the best course of the treatment. Yeah, prescription meds like antibiotics may be needed, might be the only way to improve symptoms, but I would strongly recommend, because of my own personal experience for the last probably 8 months of using this stuff, if you got a Walgreens handy, get a hold of them. Stop in there. Tell them you're looking for this product called MG217. Just remember MG, Mother of God, makes it simple. But you want the psoriasis, MG217. There's a couple of different ones, but this is the one that works. I've actually got a photo of it on my cell phone. Ensure that I don't screw myself up and get the wrong stuff. Take advantage. Keep in mind, scalp folliculitis is a skin condition that affects the skin on your head. It causes bumps that can be red, pus-filled, and sore. Only a few bumps can be found on the head, or several covering the scalp. Scalp folliculitis has many causes, including viruses and bacteria. And the treatment aims to manage the underlying condition and care for the skin while it heals. This article is published at drkelly.net. There are some links embedded. It's entitled Scalp Folliculitis Treatment for the Inflamed Bump. Stick around. We'll be back for the next hour.
Music so tender, it brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you once more under the stars and down by the shore. Orchestras playing, and even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin to live it again is past all endeavor, except when that tune touches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever and promising never, never to part. What moments divine, what rapture serene, clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So don't let them begin the beginning. begin the beginning. Oh, yes, let them begin the beginning. Make them fly till the stars that were there before return above you. Till you whisper to me once more, darling, I love you. And we suddenly know heaven we're in when they begin the beginning, when they begin the beginning.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we the people are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.